Clive Palmer's apologised to China for his insulting remarks on last week's Q&A on ABC TV, but his Tasmanian colleague, Jackie Lambie, hasn't apologised for hers. Senator Lambie warned of a possible future communist Chinese invasion of Australia and said she feared our grandchildren could become slaves to an aggressive, anti-democratic, totalitarian foreign power. Foreign policy analysts have not just attacked those views. Some are worried that they'll take attention away from a legitimate debate about China's real military behaviour in the present towards its much nearer neighbours. Dr. John Lee is non-resident senior scholar at the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C., and a long-time observer of Chinese economic and foreign policy.
The claims that the Chinese are making in the East China Sea and South China Sea, China has always made those claims. I think what they're trying to do now is change what they call the facts on the ground. That is, if you gain effective control of certain islands and territories and maritime sea lanes, you can then down the track claim those as a fait accompli, if you like, and get legal recognition of those. So that's a Chinese strategy.
You said that they were only trying to get things that they have always historically believed belong to China. Do you think that they have any territorial ambitions beyond that?
They've tended to interpret history in a way that suits them. So, for example, they've reached back to the peak periods of the Ming Dynasty and the Qing Dynasty to assert their so-called historic rights over various territories. Part of the problem with any great power, particularly China, is that as your power grows, you tend to reinterpret history to your liking. So if they go down this route of using history to claim territories, well, in a sense, you can always expand that beyond what they're claiming now.
But when you hear Jackie Lambie from the Palmer United Party talking about the threat of a communist Chinese invasion of Australia, is there any part of Chinese history that could justify that?
I don't think so. And I don't see any signs, or there are no signs that the Chinese are making any claims in Australia. In a sense, the claims made by Jackie Lambie are so absurd that I don't actually think it will harm relations between Australia and China. All it really does is just harm the reputation of the PUP. But we are fortunate in one sense that the claims have been so extreme that they're not really taken seriously by anyone in Beijing.
Jackie Lambie herself apart, isn't it true that the defence establishment likes to keep itself in a position where if something like that ever did happen, we would be in a position to defend ourselves without ever actually naming a country like, say, China?
The reality is that China will not have the capabilities for decades to launch any kind of invasion of Australia. Yes, the defence establishment likes to look at the worst-case scenarios, but it's simply just not a worst-case scenario that is being considered by anyone credible in defence.
Now, can I ask you about the longer-term view of China as a rising power in general? Is China's economy, which you have studied intensively, capable of going on growing at the speed that it has?
I don't think so. In fact, I'm fairly confident that they can't grow at the speed that they have. If you just take the last 10 years as one example, the Chinese economy has grown largely by about 162% or something like that. But if you look at that growth, about 80% of that growth has been the result of building things, that is capital inputs. So 8 in every 10 output dollars of China has simply been a result of adding capital into the economy. Now, to put that in some kind of perspective, China currently, the fixed investment activity in China is currently about 50% of GDP. Now, what does that mean? If you look at countries that industrialized in the 60s and 70s and 80s, like Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, fixed investment as proportion of GDP never exceeded 31-32%. So China is literally building more things proportionately than any economic power in history. And laws of economics tell you that you can't build all these things that the country doesn't need, and you can't sustain such a model.
And what about the limits to growth of extremely polluted air, extremely polluted water, and also just eventually running out of land?
In terms of the pollution aspect, it's become a social problem. The official figures in China tell us that last year there was something like 184,000 instances of mass unrest. a growing number of those are to do with pollution.
Did you say 184,000?
1,000 instances of mass unrest, that's correct. Mass unrest being defined as 50 or more people protesting against the government. What they want is they want cleaner air, they want unpolluted rivers. Effectively, they want a better standard of living. So it's becoming a social problem, which the Chinese Communist Party has to respond to. So I don't think the Chinese Communist Party has a solution. They can't keep on growing the same way without these environmental factors and these other structural economic factors getting worse and worse.
So if they don't have a solution, what's going to happen?
What will tend to happen is that you'll have what will automatically occur as a structural slowdown, that is, rather than growing at 10%, it's now 7%. The real figure is probably around 5%. Over the next few years, I think it will probably decline to what you might call more normal growth rates, maybe 3-4%. Now, in that situation, you might be able to stem the environmental problems that are occurring in China. But then the other problem emerges of, if you don't have rapid growth, what does that do to the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party? And this goes back to the comment I was making at the beginning, that China as a state and as a regime is a very vulnerable entity.
Dr. John Lee of the Hudson Institute, and there'll be a longer version of that interview on our website from this evening. Around Australia, this is PM.